Well, there was a time not that long ago when it could be days or weeks or even longer before you saw the photos that you took. Now it's all instantaneous and you can immediately see what you took, whether it's good or not. And if you want to keep it, that's all great. But one thing hasn't changed. We still need to know how to use our camera in order to get good shots. And that's where Jack Socha comes in. He's a photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought and joins us now. Jack, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, thank you for having me back on. It's always a delight to be chatting with you and to try to answer a few questions here and there. And it's been a pretty exciting time in my neck of the woods for two reasons. Number one, the second edition of the book came out. And also, with the demise of the lifelong learning classes that went away, the non-credit classes locally in the La Crosse area in January, I've now picked up at least the photo ball, and we're teaching those classes with a business friend of mine, Bob Metcalf, a local photographer. So those classes have just kicked in and are now available. We began teaching them a month or two back. So it's been pretty exciting.
Oh, lots going on. And you have your site is a great, I think, because I like it because of for a variety of reasons, but you have a lot of great information to share on it.
Yeah, the site is not the prettiest site. There's not a lot of flash animations and all that stuff, but we do try to give you the information that you need, and I am working on some new things. Interesting thing with the second edition is that it has been slanted more towards the so-called DSLR user than the compact camera user, because you may have noticed this in the stores as well, that people who initially bought compact cameras who just wanted to take snapshots were somewhat amazed at how much they had to learn. And they have kind of fled and gone over to camera phones.
Yep.
And so now you've got what I would call boutique compact cameras, ones that are a little more expensive and do a little more stuff. And also you've got now the DSLRs. And we've noticed both in the classes and just generally that people who are interested either as a hobby or maybe an avocation or in some cases even a vocation are really moving over to DSLRs because our DSLR classes have been jumping. Bob is a professional photographer of many years, so we have a basic class and now an advanced class. And there's a lot of people who are trying to make a little bit of an extra living doing baby photos, senior photos, just photos, and they've discovered that their aspirations require them to learn a few things.
And a DSLR, and Paul Kinzer mentioned that term as well, and maybe you should, it's digital single lens reflex, right?
Yeah, and actually this term is changing a little bit, which we can talk about if we have time, but it's essentially the most versatile camera available because you can remove the lens and put a different one on. And in some cases with telescopes, you put a telescope adapter on there, and it basically changes the whole way the camera works. Now, these cameras start at around, I would say, $500 and work their way up, but it's really important for people to try to decide ahead of time what kind of pictures they plan on taking before they plunk down the money for the gear. As a matter of fact, in November and December, we are at the studio, Bob Metcalf Studios, we are offering a one-night class simply to help you pick the kind of camera you need. We intensively interrogate you as to what is it you want to do. But a lot of times it's a better idea to buy a good lens and a less expensive DSLR body as opposed to an expensive DSLR body and a mediocre lens.
Yeah, well, yeah, good points there. Jack Socha, our guest today, talking with him about photography today and single-lens reflex cameras, digital single-lens reflex cameras, and taking photos. Give us a call. Are you in the market for a digital camera? Not sure what to get for the types of photos you want to take? I know Jack's happy to talk with you.
Yeah. You know, Larry, we're kind of in phase two of digital cameras because up till now, there's been an awful lot of design and reference based on film.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, we're seeing things like in the so-called DSLR, the SL part, single lens reflex, has to do with a mirror flipping up and down and a little prism to reflect the light into the viewfinder. More and more companies are now making cameras that look like a DSLR, traditional camera, but they're called mirrorless. And what they've done is they've replaced that mechanical mechanism with a miniature electronic viewfinder inside the eyepiece. And I'm predicting that eventually the flipping up and down mirror, the thing that you hear in presidential news conferences all the time,
right,
that's going to be going away in a few years.
Very interesting. If you'd like to join in our conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org. And maybe you've got a photo you want to share with us. Oh, that'd be kind of fun, too. Or maybe there's something going on with the photos you're taking. Post it up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's take a look and see what we can come up with. So again, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show for that. So the $500 is sort of the low end of a DSLR.
Yeah, that would still get you something in the neighborhood of a Canon Digital Rebel, which still has the traditional flip-up mirror. But there are so many others. There are now. I noticed that Pentax was purchased by Ricoh. And I just saw a camera in one of the photo magazines. The lens is not removable, and it does have that electronic eyepiece as opposed to the flip-up mirror. But the lens range goes from like 28 millimeter all the way out to like 1200 millimeter.
Wow.
And it wasn't that expensive. It was well under $500. Part of the reason that these prices will be getting a bit more stable is that by removing all these moving parts, the reliability increases and the cost basically drops because it doesn't cost as much to make them. But the traditional cameras, Fuji, for example, they tend to be making what I call boutique cameras where they're still using some traditional knobs and things.
Yeah.
But a camera that you might have paid $200 for in the 70s, a digital version now costs you $1,200 because of all the moving parts they have to use.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's getting pretty exciting. There's also now the compact camera that has the removable lenses. And I have a slightly older model, Nikon, that I picked up. Fascinating camera. It is not a digital SLR. It is a compact camera whose lenses you can change. And for people who travel, it's not a bad idea. And the lenses are really sharp.
Yeah, excellent. Brian in Wausau has a question. Hi, Brian. Thank you for calling.
Hey, for taking my call. My wife has a Canon G11 that just went bad on her, and she's looking to replace it with something similar. She is partial to that G series. She likes that, called a viewfinder on the back. She can flip open and flip around. She was looking at the G16, but that doesn't do that. And she also looked at stepping up to the Canon, I think it was like a 5XI SLR or something, but something in that $500 to $700 price range.
Yeah, most new cameras, especially compacts, do have that so-called articulated screen that you can pull out. So I would be looking at one of the newer Canon PowerShots. Also, I've had very good luck with some of the Sony CyberShots. But the main thing is that even now there are certain so-called mirrorless DSLRs coming out that also have that articulated viewfinder. I guess a lot depends on whether you need to interchange the lenses and also how big a camera that you want to carry. What kind of pictures does she want to take?
Most of ours is just, you know, around with the family, doing stuff with the kids out and about. And I don't know if she wants to. She's been looking at that SLR, but I don't know if she wants to tote that around all the time for just, you know.
Yeah, if you're not going to use it, if it ends up sitting at home, you'd be better off buying. If you like Canon, it's very hard to go wrong with one of the power shots, and I can guarantee you that a number of them had the articulated finder that swings out or flips up or does that. So I would look into one of those, and I'm sure she'd be happy with it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks
a lot, Brian, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Orfordville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello there. My son is what's commonly known as a foamer, which is guys that like to take pictures of trains.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of his friends have these remote flash towers for taking nighttime shots. We have a Sony CyberShot, very great. We've bought it up in Madison at a camera shop that they taught us a whole lot. But I cannot figure out, is there a way to get that to incorporate a remote flash tower?
Yeah, and you're very lucky to have a full-service camera store, because that's really a wonderful thing.
They're fantastic. Yeah. The guy was talking to the other guy at the counter, and they both stopped and wound up listening and learned something from each other.
I would do a little Google search or buy a couple of the photo magazines and look in the back, because there are things called remote flash triggers that can mount on your camera and then will wirelessly fire another bank of flashes of some kind. I don't know how many or how powerful you need to light up a train at night. I'm afraid it might be quite a rig, but they're not uncommon. There's a remote flash trigger that goes onto your hot shoe, and then there's a companion flash that it fires. And if you look in the back of a Shutterbug magazine or a Popular Photography, you'll see some ads for those, or just do an internet search for a digital SLR remote flash trigger, and I'm sure you'll find a whole bunch of them.
Well, fantastic. He'll be very happy to hear that.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot for calling. Remote flash trigger, correct?
Right. And you're going to need some serious horsepower as far as lighting is concerned, because that's a project.
Let's turn to Audrey in Kenosha next. Audrey, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is I have a Nikon Coolpix 5700, and it's a 5-megapixel digital camera. And one day I went to turn it on, and I get no picture from either my viewfinder or from the actual lens. So I'm thinking my shutter is stuck. And I was wondering, is there something I can do to reboot the camera, or is there something that I can physically do here, or would I have to send it in?
Well, okay. The short version of this is going to be it could be the sensor has gone bad, and regardless of that, no matter what's wrong with it, the terrible term is beyond economic repair. For the price of getting it repaired, you could probably buy a 15 megapixel camera.
Right.
And so,
I think it was a 12.8 megapixel camera.
Yeah.
And that was like $100, but I'm kind of really partial to this.
Yeah,
this
it's a
Nikon.
Good camera, and I have several 5-megapixel cameras I use all the time. When you put the battery in, does it power up? Anything happen on the camera at all?
Everything powers up. I actually like right now I just turned it on, and in the little digital screen I get all my information.
Okay, your back screen is working.
The back screen is working, and I will also get that same information through the glass lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I just don't get a picture.
But no picture. My first impression is the sensor has gone bad, in which case you're kind of out of luck. You might want to go again, do a little internet search on, just look up, reset Nikon. Coolpix model, whatever it is, there may be a button there. There's a tiny possibility that there's a little battery hiding in that camera someplace that has died. But I think basically it doesn't. It sounds more like there's either something mechanical has happened or the sensor has gone bye-bye. And the good news is you probably can go on to some online auction site and buy a similar one for around $7.
And I have some more on that in just a minute, so really keep listening, Audrey, right after this look at the news. There's nothing like a great photo to remind you of wonderful travels, maybe time spent with friends and family, or just a remarkable nature scene. But knowing how to use your digital camera and getting the right camera for your needs in the first place, that's the key to success. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. We're lucky to have with us Jack Socha to call on as a resource. Jack's a photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, and there's a new version of that book out now as well. It's great to have him with us to share what he knows. And Jack, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. I was just looking up a wireless flash during the break, and there is a brand called Flashpoint that has an extensive series that you can control flash up to 600 feet away. So there's stuff out there. Just do a little search on that as well.
And for Audrey, who had the problem with her Nikon, we got a call from someone else who said that here's the good news. Nikon had a recall for this problem, for this exact problem. So Audrey and anybody else with that issue with their camera should check with the Nikon website.
Yeah, there was a period of time several years ago, about the time 5-megapixel cameras were out there, that everybody bought the same sensor from the same company, and in high humidity, they delaminated. Now, whether they are still replacing those at this late date, I can't tell you, but I'm happy they reminded us of that, because it did happen. Periodically, I will run across a nice used camera at a thrift store. I just bought a beautiful Canon PowerShot, 6-7 megapixels, for $7.
Huh?
But be sure to bring batteries with you and test it, because I have found a few that had exactly the same problem that Audrey had, and again, whether the recall is still active or not, I can't tell you. But yeah, you can now find used cameras for next to nothing, because people think that for some reason 8 megapixels is just not enough anymore. And frankly, for most things, it's just fine.
Yeah, just fine. I want to point out, going back to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, my good friend Kurt Westbrook sent a photo, a 6-exposure photo of a partial solar eclipse. And it's a pretty cool photo. You got the 6 shots, and he says, "Whoops! I bumped the camera on exposure number 4, and it's just a little out of line with all the rest of them." So it's a really cool shot, and I would invite anybody near their computer to go to my Facebook page and take a look at Kurt's photo, as well as some of the other photos that we already have up there. They're pretty cool.
You know, Larry, that reminds me, one thing that you also can find at thrift stores very inexpensively, and it's an amazing accessory, is a tripod.
Yeah.
A lady was taking one of my classes. She bought a very nice Italian Manfrotto tripod at a garage sale for 75 cents.
75 cents?
Yes. And I purchased 2 1970s vintage Leitz tilt-alls, which are built like tanks, for under $10 a piece, and I use them all the time. Tripod is really important, whether it's astrophotography or using a portrait lens or just plain anything. If you can put your camera on a tripod, you can get into the picture yourself or whatever. But they're frequently, people just don't think they need them anymore, and so you can take advantage of that.
I have a email, I believe, from Michael from New Berlin. Oh, actually, he called. He called to ask, Adobe Photoshop is so expensive. Is there a good option for photo editing that's less expensive?
Well, I can tell you 2 things. Number one, yes. And if you go to my site, acpress.com, I still have the same slightly modified article I've had up for several years now.
Yeah.
On 5 free image editing programs. Ones I use every day myself, and they're all free. They range from the graphic image manipulation program, GIMP, which is very Photoshop-like, to my all-time favorite from a French guy called Photo Filter, and 2 or 3 more that they don't cost you a dime, and there's no hooks involved. They will do a good job. Now, my wife, Alice, who lays out books for a living, discovered that she can essentially pay a monthly fee. I think it's like $10. And use the current version of Photoshop when she's working on images for her book layout. So it can be used without dropping the big money ahead of time as well. But again, for a lot of people, Photoshop is a pretty good learning curve. And I would suggest going to the site, acpress.com, locate the little sub thing beneath the hummingbird that says articles, and you'll find the same basic article I had up for a long time. I use those programs all the time.
You know, it's really funny. When I saw that note from Michael, I got a big smile on my face, because I knew exactly what you were going to say.
Yeah,
that's really good news for a lot of people.
Yeah, but not everybody wants to become a graphic artist. And there are certainly some things in Photoshop that are incredible. And my partner and class teacher, Bob Metcalf, uses it exclusively for his professional work. He does product photography and he does architectural photography. He uses it all. And there's some things in Photoshop that can actually straighten out buildings now. I mean, it's really amazing. But for the average photographer out there who just needs to kick up the contrast a little bit, maybe sharpen it, and certainly do some cropping, these programs that are mentioned on the site are good. I will give you one caveat, though. Go to the original maker of the software to download it.
Ah.
Don't go to somebody else who happens to be offering it, because they sometimes tack additional things on. You want to go to the actual site of the people who are offering the software.
Very good advice. Let's turn to Kathy in Eau Claire next. Kathy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. This program is very timely. I just got back from Utah, and one really windy day, I believe I have sand in my camera because the aperture in the front, it opens a little bit, but not all the way. And I just wondered, is there a way to have that fixed, or am I going to have to buy a new camera?
How old a camera is it?
Maybe 5 years.
I hate to tell you, but you should be shopping this holiday season for another camera. Now, what you can do a little bit, if just as long as you're going to have to do that, you may try to take a little rubber bulb air thing and gently blow around in there and see if you can do it. But
okay.
When somebody charges you $75 an hour to fix something,
right.
The math just isn't there.
Yeah. Oh, shucks. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, yeah, and once you're going to have to do it anyway, you might as well give it a shot with a little air bulb.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Fred in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi, I've got a quick question about using a wireless SD card for a Nikon camera. I have the Nikon 3100 camera, and I know that more expensive models have a built-in app that you can download to transfer wirelessly between computers. I'm wondering what you recommend for SD or wireless.
Yeah, I have never used one of those cards. I see them very frequently coming up for sale on there's a site that's an adjunct of Amazon called Woot, WOOT.com, and they're not terribly expensive. I've heard good things about them. They've gotten fairly good reviews. They, of course, will use more power because there's a built-in Wi-Fi connection. But seriously, I have not personally used one, but they're cheap enough now. I mean, we're not talking more than, say, $40 for a lower capacity one, that you can certainly give it a try and see if it works for you. And again, I would just do a little searching for them and see if you can get some qualified reviews. It's very tricky on the internet, because sometimes people write bad reviews because they don't know what they're doing, but other times they do know what they're doing. You might try going to like Steve's Digicams, which is a pretty reliable site, and see if they have any information on it. But from what I'm reading, they do work. So I just, you know, they're not so much money that you're going to go bankrupt buying one.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Fred. Thanks a lot for calling. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And as always, you can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Talked about a nice picture that Kurt Westbrook sent a little bit ago. If you have a cool photo, we'd love to see that as well.
You know, Larry, I should point out that just because the second edition of the book has a leaning towards digital SLRs, the basic information is for anybody who has a compact camera, new or old. Resolution, zooming, cropping, exposure, what apertures are, what ISOs are. It's a general primer, as they say, for anybody who doesn't really understand what digital photography is all about. So we have aimed it a little bit more for the DSLR owners, but it's still perfectly applicable for anybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Connie Jo from Blue Mounds called, and her granddaughter is taking a trip to Norway. Connie Jo can loan her a big Nikon DSLR 7100, but would she be better off with something that fits in her pocket for travel photography?
You have to ask her what her aspirations are for that. I mean, frankly, for travel photography, this is where a better quality compact camera does a great job. A Canon PowerShot or one of those Nikon ones I was talking about with removable lenses, or again, the Sony CyberShots. I have a delightful one that I use. And if I was taking a long trip, especially if it's going to be in Norway in the cold, you keep it inside your coat pocket, and that keeps the battery from going dead. So I, unless he's really an enthusiast, I tend to lean towards something more pocketable.
And Tatiana on Facebook said, I do backlit live art, and the camera doesn't see the full UV spectrum we see with our eyes. So the photos become chunky, and the gradients and subtle colors are lost. I know I must use a tripod and keep the flash off, but any other advice would be appreciated.
Wow, that's a tough one. That sounds more like a graphic arts thing. There's a vague possibility that you might be able to use some kind of a UV filter or maybe even a polarizing filter to get a better effect that you're looking for. But if you're trying to catch stuff that's out of the visible spectrum, most digital cameras have a filter in there that really are trying to stop that from happening. So you're kind of working at cross purposes on that one. Unless these things are, well, they're probably pretty large, you might be better off trying to see if you can scan them if they're smaller. But that sounds like something for a little bit more specialized camera that would be outside the range of most of the stuff that I've dealt with.
All right, there we go. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments and some more callers online. Let's see. Dan, hi, thanks for calling.
Yes. A while back I acquired a collection, let's say, of the older SLRs, and also had kind of like a developer, and I've always wanted to get more into photography, and I just have a small digital point and shoot, but I want to learn the old-fashioned way. And
mm-hmm. Film cameras, in other words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to develop your own black and white film?
Yeah, and okay. I wanted to learn how to use these. I just wrapped them up and put them in the box. So I bought
sure.
this guy.
Sure. Yeah. For one thing, I would be looking around in a used bookstore for a book called The Joy of Photography, which might be really good, or the Old Time Life series. The exposure theory is the same whether it's digital or film, but if you want to do developing and things like that, I would look into one of those. Also, I think they're still in business. There's a company, used to be called Freestyle Sales, and they would be able to supply you with film and chemicals that you would need to develop and make contact prints and things like that. So I would look there. Again, if you have a full-service camera store in your area, you're lucky. They should be able to order stuff for you as well.
Yeah.
And what was the other one, the Freestyle Sales?
Yeah, there used to be a company called Freestyle Sales, and I think they're still in business, and they would sell the chemistry needed to develop and print
Joy
film.
Joy of Photography is the old...
Yeah, Joy of Photography.
Joy of Photography is a wonderful book, and it's still very applicable today.
Yeah, it's an excellent book.
Yeah,
and that was fun. You probably developed your own films. I have... back in the day, and it was kind of fun.
I saw something online, which I'm going to try some winter day, where they claim that you could develop black and white film in very strong instant coffee, and then you could fix it in some kind of common pool chemical. Now, it's going to have to be a real cold day when I got nothing else to do. Yeah. I do have a question for your listeners, and they could drop me a note at editor@acpress.com. If you had your choice between an ebook and an audio book of this same book, which would you prefer? Because I'm considering doing an audio book that you could download onto your smartphone or whatever, and then making the illustrations and diagrams available as a free downloadable PDF that you could also put on your phone. But I'm also tempted to do the ebook version. I just don't know which people want.
Well, let's get and where do they
just editor@acpress.com.
Oh, acpress.com?
Yeah, editor@acpress. I'm just curious. I don't have a feel for this. I'm thinking the audiobook would be good because when you're traveling on vacation, you could listen to it.
Yeah.
And also, frankly, I have my own studio, so I can produce it very quickly, and I can do a nice job with it. So we'll see.
All right, we will. Candy in Kewaskum has a question for you. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Pentax KX that I used for, I used it for four or five years, and recently upgraded to the K50. And I gave the KX to my daughter, and I didn't realize until I upgraded how dirty or how damaged the viewfinder, the eyepiece is. It is so, it's really uncleanable. I don't know if it's acid rain or what that's damaged it so bad. I can't believe that I actually looked through that for that long. So I don't know. It's a very awesome weatherproof camera, so it has been in the elements a lot, and I'm suspicious that I don't think there's moisture trapped in there, but I've tried everything to clean it without taking it apart, and I don't know, is it something that I should send in, or
yeah.
is there a way that I can take that
if,
piece
off? If you want to keep using the camera, I would suggest getting it professionally cleaned. There could be dust specks on the mirror. There could be dust specks on the outside of the screen that goes up into the prism. And getting much beyond that, you'd have to disassemble the camera, and that gets expensive. But if you're going to keep using the camera and get some kind of an estimate on it first. But I think, unfortunately, you have to pretty much professionally clean it. You could try using some, a bulb with some air to try to clean some of it out, but do not do what one guy did. He tried using soft scrub to clean the inside of his camera, and it'll ruin it. And that's a serious, real story. It really happened.
Wow.
Sadly enough, cleaning
a camera is
tricky.
It's really just the viewing part of it, because the photos are fine. And
yeah.
Stuff gets
stuck in between the prism and the screen, and getting it out is a bit of a trick.
Okay, yep. I will do the professional method. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for calling, Candy. Brandon in Iowa. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, good afternoon.
And what's on your mind?
Well, I recently, my whole life I've had aspirations of getting into photography. And throughout my life, I've bought cameras here and there, and I just haven't really used them. And then over time, they become obsolete technology. But recently, I wanted, and he had mentioned it before, when camera phones started to become better, I saw that as a great opportunity for me to get into photography, because it embedded it into a device that I already use on a daily basis. And so I chose to go with the Nokia 920 with a Carl Zeiss camera on it. At the time, it was the best camera on the market, a camera phone on the market. Besides the Nokia 1020. And I'm just looking for your opinion about that phone, if you know anything about it, and any features that maybe stand out to you.
I honestly do not use camera phones, because I have regular cameras. And there's nothing wrong with being a photographer with a camera phone. You see it used on news all the time.
Yes.
You would really want to check in with again, there are forums for everything on the Internet. Look for a camera phone forum. Cameras are getting better in phones because they see an opportunity there, as are accessories for them as well. And so I would just do a little bit of hunting on the Internet to see if you can find a discussion group on it. There may even be a Nokia forum where you could talk about that and maybe even see some examples of photos taken. But that's about all I really know about them, I'm afraid.
All right. There we go. Good luck with that, Brandon. Appreciate the call. Mike in Lake Bluff, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Anyhow, I really love black and white photography, and I learned photography with an old Canon FTB, a film camera. And I recently took a photo elements course, and the instructor mentioned a program called, I think it was called Silvertone. It converts color images to black and white. Are you familiar with that, or any other programs like that?
I'm not familiar with that particular program, but there are even tutorials that you can find for free, again, of course, on the Internet, that explain how using things like Photoshop or Photoshop Elements, how you can tweak the picture while it's still color, and then convert it to monochrome, and then it looks really good. So I think before you spend any money on a program that you have to pay for that will do that for you, you might be able to do it yourself, especially with Photoshop Elements, and I would just do a quick search for that. I'm pretty confident you can.
Well, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Carol in Green Bay, hi.
Hi. This is very timely because I'll be traveling to Africa in February, and I have two cameras. One is a small Sony CyberShot, and the other is an Olympus E510. And, of course, I'll be on a safari. I'm wondering which would be the better camera to take. The little Sony CyberShot doesn't have a real good telephoto lens, and of course, I'd like to get some good pictures of some animals if I could. So, what do you suggest?
Well, if you want to get some shots from a distance of animals, you probably need the camera with the longer lens, unless, of course, the Sony CyberShot has a higher number of pixels, because then you could crop it down and end up with the same thing. I'm partial, maybe I'm just getting lazy in my old age, but I'm partial for smaller cameras, and I have used several Sony CyberShots with extremely good results. So I'm kind of leaning in that direction, especially if it's more than 10 megapixels. And also, don't forget to bring along a couple of Ziploc bags to store it in when you're to keep the humidity out of it and keep the dust out of it as well.
Yeah, good points.
The CyberShot that I have is probably 6 years old, and I took it on a hiking trip recently, and I just can't get those close-ups.
Well, then that would knock that one out of the picture. You might consider, if you feel like doing so, looking into the newer models or the PowerShots or even that Pentax I mentioned earlier in the show that has a zoom range from 28 millimeter to 1,200 millimeter.
Yeah.
That's about $345, but that's quite a thing.
Good luck, Carol. Thanks very much for calling. And, Jack, thank you so much. I want to remind people to go to your site, which is acpress.com.
That's correct. And if you have any questions or comments at all, and also information about whether you'd like an e-book or an audio book, just editor@acpress.com, and I'll be happy to hear from you.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks very much for calling. Jack Socha of acpress.com. Go there if you want to learn some more about photography. And if you want to learn about bugs, come visit us tomorrow because Phil Pelletieri joins me on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.